Please pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Today's scripture passage comes from Matthew chapter 13, verses 31 and 32. Listen for the word of God. He put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all the seeds, but when it has grown, it is the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. This is the word of the Lord. I love getting lost. Some of the most meaningful and surprising and exciting experiences in my life have come when it appeared the straight way was lost. I was lucky enough when I was studying abroad, I got to do some traveling in Europe. And I bought this guidebook through Europe. It's like, I think it was the Rough Guide. And I was in Rome, and it had this big section on Rome. You know, it tells you all the things you have to do, the Colosseum, the Pantheon, the Forum, all these amazing things that you have to see. And I did. You know, the first day I spent in the Vatican. The second day I spent just walking throughout the city, seeing all these, like the Trevi Fountain, the steps, all these things. And my final day, the guide has this little section about places you need to eat to experience true Rome. So they were talking about this pizza place, this really small pizza place, sort of on the outside of the city. And the guidebook said it was the best pizza in the world. This is like the birthplace of pizza and all these things. I was like, okay, I'll go to this pizza place. I'll bite the guidebook bullet. And so I set out to find this place, and it was really, really hard to find. I must have walked for a couple hours. It was really far out of the way, and I didn't have a smartphone at the time. This is like 6 years ago. So they had smartphones. I just didn't have one. So I just had the little map in the book. It's like a facing page map. And so I was weaving through all these small streets, and I finally got there, and I was like, oh, I made it. And it was closed. So that was the worst. But it was actually quite amazing. I didn't really know where I was. I sort of just walked down all these small side streets. And while I was walking, and after I was walking, just wandering around, after I found out the restaurant was closed, you might say I was roaming in Rome. I promise that's the last pun. I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself. I saw the true life of the city, though. You're outside of the Colosseum area, you're outside of the Forum, you're outside of the big tourist industry area, and you see people and the lives they lead. I didn't see any tourists. There were no souvenir shops. I saw people who lived there. It was about 6, 7-ish, and some people were still coming back from work. And I saw them, you know, looking tired, some looking really happy, some looking bored. As I was walking, I stopped at it was a restaurant. It looked like a house. There was a garden out front, just like a walled-in garden with these big communal picnic tables. And I sat down at one of the picnic tables and tried with some success to have a conversation with the people I sat with. Their English wasn't great, and my Italian is non-existent. But we managed to form a connection. They wanted to know about me, like what was I doing out here, like 10 miles outside the center of the city. Maybe not 10 miles, that's a lie. But I managed to make a connection. I found out one of the couple I was sitting with, they were there on their anniversary. They met at the same restaurant 5 years ago, and they come back every anniversary, and they live only a few blocks away. And I found true people in Rome. And it was true discovery. It was true exploration. And I spent 3 days in Rome, and each day was amazing. But this last day was by far the most meaningful and the most exciting and different. It seems today that so often we get caught up in a destination. I mean, it's a category unto itself now. We have destination restaurants. We have destination hotels. We have destination beaches. And I don't think that's a bad thing. But it seems that when we have this idealized like destination in our minds, we see it and we sprint there. We put our blinders on and we just try and get there, as if we get some kind of prize when we get to this, the best pizza in the world. We win. And instead, we ignore everything that's happening around us. When in reality, it's those experiences that we see when we turn our heads and look side to side. It's those experiences that define us. Those experiences when the straight way was lost. And these lines might sound familiar, and if they do, they're the opening lines of Dante's epic Inferno. Dante starts, "Midway in the journey of our life, I came to myself in a dark wood, for the straight way was lost." Now this phrase, "I came to myself," it's meant to impress this moment of clarity, a sudden moment of clarity, this jarring sensation, as if Dante had been walking in a dream and he was suddenly awoken. Or maybe he was in a foggy valley and the fog suddenly lifted and he saw everything around him clearly. Now the interesting thing here is Dante's journey through hell, he goes on a journey through the seven layers of hell, and Virgil is his guide, showing him all of these things. But his journey, his vision, that's what it is. It's a dream. Notice Dante comes to himself in his dream. It takes a vision to jolt him out of his daily life. Dante's clarity is the dream. His life has clouded his mind. There was a lot of pressure. He was already starting to be successful, but there's so much pressure to be a poet. They get compared to the greats like Virgil and Homer. And at the time, you feel this pressure, and he sees his destination is to come to that level, to be that good. But to do that, you can't compare yourself to that sort of benchmark. It's futile. It's only in his dream that he's able to lose sight of the straight way, and in losing the straight way, to come to himself. Sometimes it seems that life is a straight path, and that can seem really nice. It seems clear what we're doing. But it can also be dangerous, for when we have that clear path, we sprint towards it. And we make goals for ourselves, which is how we move forward, is how we progress. But accomplishing those goals is never really as easy or as straightforward as we first thought. It takes more than a small amount of imagination to picture ourselves accomplishing that goal. And this is, I think, what Jesus is getting at. Now, first of all, before we get into the parable, I just want to say a quick word about the mustard seed. Now, I'm not a gardener, but I think we all know the mustard seed is not the smallest seed, and it does not grow into the tallest tree. It grows 8-10 feet maybe. So you could call it a tree. In Mark's version, he just calls it a shrub, but Matthew calls it, it grows into the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree. So that's fine. We can work with that. But it's not important that it doesn't really matter that it's not actually the smallest seed. At the time, it was a widely known figure of speech. It referred to something that was almost impossible to see. It was just used as the example of that which is minuscule. So, and that's the point. When it was first planted, it seems unimportant. It seems that it will have an insignificant impact on the future of that area. However, as it grows, it becomes clear that it is not insignificant at all. It provides a number of things. It provides shade for birds and other animals. It provides a home for some birds. It provides a spice that can add flavor to things. I don't actually know if mustard is a spice, but you can make mustard out of it, which adds flavor. But this happens far down the line. It doesn't happen right away. The one who sows this seed has to have patience. It takes many years for it to grow into its complete form. Now, the farmer that plants this seed needs to give it care, needs to give it time, and that farmer probably needs a lot of patience because I'm sure it is frustrating when it doesn't grow for a long time. And this is true for any small seed, and this here, just the example here, is the mustard seed. But nevertheless, it does grow. With the inevitability of time and the seasons, it will grow. It evolves into a new form, something that gives life, What once was planted in the ground is now sprouting up, giving life to other things, providing a chance for other things to live. Now, this parable occurs in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and it's almost the same in all three of those Gospels. But in Matthew and Luke's version, there's an interesting difference. There's another character. So there's the seed, but there's another character. There's the one who plants the seed. And in Matthew, it reads, "The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and sowed in his field." Now, a farmer would not plant one seed. A farmer would plant a field of seeds, no matter what the harvest, mustards or anything. And this is important if we decide to read this parable allegorically. This soul farmer planting a soul seed is representative. We see the soul farmer is God, and the soul seed is Jesus. Jesus, whose life will come to completeness in the fulfillment of the kingdom of heaven, which this parable is about. Now, the point here is that God is doing something which seems very insignificant on earth. It's a very passive action, planting a very teeny seed, and yet it grows to have this massive impact on the area it's sowed. And as it's sowed, when it grows, it'll sprout more seeds, and these seeds will grow and spread. And Jesus, it takes time for him to grow into the completeness of his form. He started out, we don't see a lot of his ministry until he's older, and then we start to see his impact on the world and the lives he's changing. This is a very powerful image, and it's very important to remember this image and to keep it. But I also want to talk about the mustard seed as symbolic of our faith. It's a small thing. It needs a lot of help to grow and survive. At times, we take great comfort in it. We bask in its shade, and we enjoy its flavor. But at other times, we might not even know it's there. It lies forgotten as we live our lives, and we may forget about that seed of faith. But when we come to ourselves, when we look into our depths, when we lose ourselves, when we lose that straight way which can be blinding, we find the seed again. I feel myself to be truly at home and the most in tune with my emotions and spirituality and my relationship with Christ. I find myself there in the wilderness, in nature. And even there, it seems that there's a lot about destination. There are 53 peaks over 14,000 feet in Colorado. And there's a race, there's a contest to see who can climb all 53 peaks the fastest. And the record is unimaginable. It's 10 days. 10 days to climb 53 peaks all throughout Colorado. It's hard to drive like around Colorado in 10 days alone, let alone climbing 5 peaks a day. It's an extreme feat of strength and endurance. You literally sprint up the mountain and then sprint back down. You don't carry anything but water, and it's quite amazing. But what's the point of that? There's a phrase, peak bagging. You just try and bag the next peak, and it doesn't even have to refer to extreme races. Just getting to that waterfall you read about, reaching new heights, literally elevations, getting higher, seeing things. Now, my parents retired to Colorado about 4 years ago, and they love to go hiking and backpacking, but they suffer a little bit from this peak bagging syndrome. In the last month, they've climbed 5 14ers and 8 13ers. And that's a very large number of peaks. They're in much better shape than I am. It's quite embarrassing. And when you look at their pictures, they're absolutely gorgeous. They're just beautiful. You can see from the top of these peaks, it seems like you can see forever. But you never see pictures during the hike. What happens on the journey to the top? Where's the work that they put in? Where's the sweat? A lot of times blood. Where is all of this? Who do you meet along the way? What do you meet? Do you meet animals? Do you meet wildlife? I can tell you, I've been on a lot of these hikes with them, and I've done some backpacking, and I can tell you, you're a different person when you started than when you finish. What happened? What did you learn about yourself? When we first moved there, I was in college, and we were about a month in New Jersey, and then only a month in Colorado before I had to go back to school. So I didn't have time to get a job, so I basically helped my parents unpack and get settled, and it was the worst. It seemed like it was just constant nagging about how to unpack and how where to put things and don't break that. And so I had enough. So after a couple of weeks, I finally said, "Mom, I'm gonna go hiking." She said, "Okay, where are we gonna go?" I'm like, "No. Can you please drop me off here and then pick me up here in about 5 days?" And she said, "Okay." So I went off and I did a portion of the Colorado Trail. And I went with the intention of just burning energy, just sort of getting out of a small space. And the first day I hiked really fast. I just wanted to put distance between me and this frustration I was feeling. The second day, I didn't go very far. I decided I walked until about lunchtime, and then I was looking at my map, and I saw there was this lake that I could get to. It's just off the trail, it's just to the east, and I walked through this amazing meadow of wildflowers in full bloom. I made it to this lake, and I sat and ate lunch, and the rest of the day I just sort of walked around, not on the trail, just in the middle of nowhere. And it was amazing. It was beautiful, and it was lonely, and it was exactly what I needed. And then I went back to the trail and walked a little farther and made camp the next night. The third day, I wanted to do the same thing, but I went a little too far off the trail. And I was eating my lunch, and I was again in another. There's meadows everywhere, just high altitude meadows of these amazing flowers, of bright reds and purples and pinks. And I was just sitting there, and then I realized I didn't really know where I was. I knew I could get back. I had a map and a compass, but I had to sit and sort of delineate where I needed to go. And that's when I started to notice some clouds roll in, and I was about 12 or 13,000 feet, and that's above tree line, and you don't want to be above tree line when there's a thunderstorm. And storms move very, very quickly in the summer months in Colorado. There's a storm just about every day in July through September. There's a big thunderstorm that happens. And I know this, I was just deciding to ignore it. So I was looking at my map, trying to quickly figure out where I needed to go, and all of a sudden the sky was black, and it was hailing, and lightning was everywhere. I was on sort of a plateau, almost not quite a ridge, but a high part, and there was a valley to either side of me, and I could see the lightning striking in both valleys, and it hadn't quite got to me yet. The straightway was lost. And this time I wasn't happy about it. It wasn't helpful that I had no idea where I was. And I realized there are two kinds of lost. There's good lost. There's the lost when you're in Rome and you find amazing things and you meet amazing people. There's the good lost when you're in Colorado and you're by a beautiful stream and a gorgeous meadow. And then there's the bad lost when you're in Colorado and you're in a gorgeous meadow and a beautiful lake and in a thunderstorm. There's the kind of lost where you don't think you'll get back. So there's not much else you could do, so I just started running, trying to get below tree line, and you just sort of pray that you don't get struck by lightning, that you're going the right way, and that you don't break an ankle, that you would find the straight way again. I was terrified, and it didn't last all that long. It was maybe 5, maybe 6 minutes. But I was scared, more scared than I've been that I can remember, as I was running down this hill. Now, I finally made it, obviously. Back below the tree line, and miraculously, I was back on the trail. I couldn't believe it. But I wasn't afraid anymore. I had adrenaline coursing through my body, and my heart was pounding. But I was looking back, maybe not on that trip, but days later, I was really happy that it had happened, actually. The storm opened right over my head, and I was petrified. But I learned a lot about myself. I learned that it's okay to be scared. I learned that sometimes you just have to act first and maybe think about it later. I learned that I can get lucky and read a map very quickly. But would I want to do it again? Absolutely not. It was awful. And when I finished the hike and my mom picked me up at the other trailhead, I was relieved, I was exhausted, I was in pain, I had blisters all over my feet. But on the trip, I came to myself. I lost the straight way. I lost it again, and I was terrified. But I came back, and I came to myself. The other day, I was talking with my dad about our mission trip to the shore, and we had been talking about the storm and Sandy and why it hit there and with such strength, and those people who are still trying to return to their normal lives. And last week, I quoted one of my dad's sayings, "Life's not fair." And due to the dutiful son, I quoted this back at him again, and I said, "Well, Dad, you know, life's not fair." And he smiled a little, but he was very serious. He didn't say much, and then our conversation ended, and then he sent me a letter a few days later. In the letter, he told me he'd been thinking a lot of his brothers. He had two brothers, an older brother, Mac, and a younger brother, Vance. When Mac was 35, he was killed in a car accident. I was 3 at the time. I don't really remember much of it. I remember that there was a lot of sadness in the home, but I don't remember any events, really. And when I was in high school, my dad's younger brother, Vance, died suddenly of a heart attack. He was 44. My dad gave the eulogy, and even though I know he cried at my Uncle Mac's funeral, it was the first time I had ever seen him cry. He told me he'd been thinking a lot of his brothers and their untimely death. Both were married and had children. Both were healthy and active, and both died suddenly with seemingly no explanation. In the letter, he said to me, "You're right. Who said life had to be fair? It is a difficult lesson, and I struggle with it when I think about my brothers and why they died and why I ended up with a very lucky life. How can one reconcile that?" Once again, the straight way was lost. Lost in pain, in sorrow, in suffering. What good is a mustard seed in the face of such pain? But the mustard seed will grow. Jesus makes this promise to us. He tells us a story about the inevitability of time and belief in a thing growing and becoming good. No matter how great the obstacle we face, how much it hurts us, how much we don't understand it, no matter how clouded our lives seem, how polluted the path we might walk, Jesus tells us the seed will grow. It will flourish. In that moment when it blooms, and we see clearly, when we come to ourselves, then we will know the true strength of our faith. However long it may have been dormant, it will blossom in a powerful and meaningful and loving way. Dante closes the Inferno with these lines. "In the remotest corner of this cavern, when the straight way is lost, there is a place one cannot find by sight, but by the sound of a narrow stream that trickles through a channel it has cut into the rock in its meanderings. Into that hidden passage my guide and I entered, to find again the world of light, to see again the stars." When the straight way is lost, when we come to ourselves, we will emerge from what has held us back. We will move, like the mustard seed's growth, however imperceptibly, ever constantly, toward that trickling stream that will guide us to the world of light, to the kingdom of heaven, to our refuge, to which we move in the shade of Christ's embrace. Amen.